Box and Dice has got a role to play there because it's got the tools to dig yourself out. It's not just work harder. It's, you know, work smarter. Bring those buyers, bring those people that bought from you 5 years ago or bought from your company 5 years ago and introduce yourself. Those clients that haven't received a contact from you in X number of days, weeks or months, contact them and just start a conversation.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry Sales Professionals, Property Managers and Leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. And for more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier on your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Today, my guest is the founder and CEO of Box and Dice, which has pioneered cloud-based real estate technology over the past two decades to become one of the country's leading CRM and transaction platforms. So welcome to the show, Travis Williams.
Hey, Sam. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You're a new contributor to the magazine. So before we get into Box and Dice and what's happening over there, I just want to mention that you're planning on writing some articles for us over the next few months and just wondering what sort of topics can our readers look forward to?
Box and Dice has been going for since its startup a couple of decades now, and we've identified a common thread to the really successful, awesome brands, and they all seem to be focused on getting a single source of truth in their organization so that they have one single customer record that everyone can share and provide that consistent brand experience. Another thing is the early starters with us have really grown. Like, there's some brands there like Jealous Craig and Nelson Alexander, and there's a lot of common attributes to their businesses, like they have awesome policy and the way that they use Box and Dice to scale their business up. So I'll be focusing on those issues.
Exciting. So we're going to be hearing from some of these big clients of yours on how they use Box and Dice to be their superpower sort of thing.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And so we'll profile some of the industry superstars, and we'll also be asking them about how they use the system and how they harness data to really become the million-dollar people that they are.
Well, that's what we love in Elite Agent, because we all know in real estate that success leaves clues, right?
It leaves clues. It leaves a really obvious trail, actually. Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's talk about, this year has been a pretty interesting year, and COVID has accelerated the digital side of real estate. Did you notice any sort of a spike in agents moving onto your software or any other shifts in the way that technology is being used this year?
Yeah, as soon as COVID hit, our usage increased, and the phone calls that I received personally were from multiple chiefs of businesses to say thanks. You know, they're just developing an understanding of what Box and Dice does for their business and what My Life's Work really is, and the insight that they have into their business, because they all had this spare time all of a sudden. Once they'd dealt with the initial shock, and, you know, there was a lot of change management, a lot of crisis management that went on, budgeting, forecasting. But after that, they sort of looked at things and said, well, hang on, what does Box and Dice really do to see the numbers of appraisals per consultant, the number of buyers added per listing, the number of ins, maybes and outs on all of these listings, and who was and wasn't following up the maybe and in buyers once they missed a actual sale, they realized the lost opportunity. I'll quote Philip Kingston from Gary Pierce, that we're going to kick ass. I can see now how we're going to propel ourselves into 2021. Visibility of metrics is an amazing, empowering thing.
You actually sort of got in and helped some of these guys with that tricky period when lockdown first happened.
They gravitated towards what we do, and our database hits went up. So everybody started working from home, which meant there was less conversations in the office. And I'm guessing that Zoom and Teams, their usage skyrocketed, but also did database entries and follow-up phone calls, prospecting back into past listings, because people had so much spare time to go and really farm those five-year-old purchases, you know, to looking to sell pretty soon. So usage went up once everyone went home. Yep.
Absolutely. And so you just mentioned your life's work, and I did read somewhere, correct me if I'm wrong, that Box and Dice actually started as a way to help your father's real estate clients.
Yeah, I owed Dad money and back in 1995, and I said, Dad, I don't want to pay you back this money, but how about I work in your business for 10 weeks? And I owed him $5,000, and it was $500 a week. I was just out of university, and I was working around the office. And back in 95, they were barely printing their own brochures and putting floor plans on the backs of brochures. That was just starting back then. They were just starting to do inspections, open for inspections. And I looked at the network and the way that they're running the business, and I just said to Dad after 10 weeks, I can do this. And my very first day in real estate, I had some business cards, and I said to my colleague, Dave, what do I do? You know, how do you store this stuff? And he pulled out his tickler file system. He was very proud of it, and so he should have, because he was organized. But I took one look at that and thought, oh, hang on a second. I was a programmer in my previous life. And I took one look at that and went home, got my computer, literally, and fired up Microsoft Access and wrote an Access database and started recording all my buyers back then. And that was the first version of Box and Dice.
Yeah, wow. That's actually, well, you and I finished uni the same year. We have that in common. I remember 1995. Reasonably well. But yeah, wow, that's, I don't remember much of Microsoft Access because I wasn't that good at computers back then. So when came the idea to build Box and Dice as a standalone business?
Wow. So I worked for 10 years listing and selling houses, and I got myself coached by the very wonderful and awesome Peter Gilchrist. And I was one of his proteges and attended all of his courses and really lived his content. And I ended up opening a few offices myself under the Williams brand. And then I connected those offices by a radio network, and my database wasn't cutting it. I was a programmer, but I wasn't very good at it. So after about 10 years, I looked at it, and people were calling me up saying, you know, can we use your system? And I sort of looked around at other systems. I had had a go at a few other systems. I didn't really want to go and do this, and I was more than willing. We bought a system called ACT, and I was more than willing to work on that. But as soon as we wanted to make changes or customize it, it was too difficult. So in 2005, I hired two programmers from Swinburne Uni, and I paired up with them or joined them myself, and we locked ourselves in a dark room. And by the end of 2005, three clients had rolled us out. It was Stevens in Yarraville, Frank Trimboli, who passed recently, rest in peace, and Gary Peer over in Caulfield. So Phil Kingston and Gary Peer are wonderful early adopters of Box and Dice, and I'll forever be appreciative to them for that.
They're lovely guys too. I've watched their weekly wraps for quite a long time there.
Good on them. They make fun of it, and it's great. You know, it's just really great.
Yeah, absolutely. What were some of the early lessons that you learned from the early days in running a startup?
The big one was after 2 or 3 years, our code base was unstable. And I know it's not a generic lesson in business, but if I had have taken more time and planned things better instead of rushing in and saying yes all the time, we would have had a better platform, better footing back then. So we played catch up for a long time after that. That was quite challenging. Also, I was very green. If I had have known what the challenges were in operating a business, I probably would have taken on partners earlier on. As it turns out, 15 years later, I didn't take on partners and made it through those peaks and troughs. And I'm very glad about that now. But gee, in those late 2000s, it was pretty stressful. I'm a proud guy and have a lot of, you know, thousands of awesome relationships, and I didn't like to let people down. So that took its toll definitely in those early years. And I worked really through the night many times to make sure I sort of delivered on my own promises. So that was quite a challenge early on.
I think it's interesting that you've come from a real estate family and also having sold 10 years yourself, and then being able to put all of that knowledge into Box and Dice is pretty amazing.
The running joke in our family was that if all else failed in my life, I would work in real estate. And because I was always the nerdy technical one in the family. I was made fun of by my older brother due to Commodore computers because I used to love them. And I used to go to the computer lab at lunchtime, and I was generally picked on by my family members, I'll say openly, for being a nerd. But the thing is, when I was 12 or 15, 17 years old, we had a phone line that came, a second phone line into the house, which was the after hours office number. And that was also my chat with my friends line. So I was answering the phone, taking sales inquiries as a teenager. So it was kind of bred into me, this whole notion of the property market, the buyer's emotions, what they go through. Because I'd spoken to them even before that. I used to go to the office after school and play with the cat in Douglas Parade in Williamstown back in the early 80s. So I couldn't avoid it, I don't think. It was fairly inevitable.
Yeah, and then real estate's one of those things that you sort of can't get away from either, really.
You can't, and it's addictive, especially when you list and sell houses, because getting those deals, it's like taking a drug. I've never taken drugs in my life, but I can imagine what it feels like, because you knock down that big auction or get that authority sign that you didn't think you'd get, and it's a good commission, a good price, and it's a rush. It's the most awesome industry, because you get such a variety of your needs met, connections and growth and success. And the challenge with real estate is finding the balance. Obsessive people like me really get obsessed with it.
We've seen that a lot over the years too, haven't we? Is that, you know, you actually need to look after yourself to be a great agent, but often, you know, we all look after ourselves last.
And particularly now during COVID, people talk about the peaks and troughs. Agents get lots of listings and you sell them and then you don't have anything. And then you get lots of listings, you sell them and you don't have anything. And we're exponents of work on those long-term relationships so that you don't face those troughs. If you do, you can see them coming if you manage your database properly. But those peaks and troughs are not just business related. They're very personal, and there's a new conversation evolving around depression in real estate. And it's, you lose that listing, it's like being splitting up with your partner sometimes. It's such a thump. And if you have several rejections like that, it can really take its toll on you and you can really get down. And people say, well, get back on the horse. It is not that easy. And the way to get back on the horse, though, is to roll your sleeves up and start working and have faith in yourself and believe in yourself. That's not easy after several letdowns. And so Box and Dice has got a role to play there, because it's got the tools to dig yourself out. It's not just work harder. It's, you know, work smarter. Bring those buyers, bring those people that bought from you 5 years ago or bought from your company 5 years ago, and introduce yourself. Those clients that haven't received a contact from you in X number of days, weeks or months, contact them and just start a conversation. And people are generally good. And when they receive a call from you in non-business times, in dormant times, people really appreciate it. That's when you start your real estate community, is when you find the time to ring those dormant clients and build those long-term, long-lasting relationships. And that's the rewarding part of the job, is when you turn up to the front door and you don't have to introduce yourself and say, hi, I'm Travis Williams, I'm the best agent in the area, I'm blah, blah. You turn up to the front door and they say, g'day, Trav, welcome back. And that's the way to really thrive. And that's what Tim Heaviside does. He rarely has to introduce himself. I know he doesn't have to turn up and say, I'm Tim Heaviside. I'm here to do an appraisal on your home. It's, g'day, Tim. G'day, James Tosterton. Welcome back. That's what how they roll. So younger agents should aspire to creating that level of connection and respect in their community, because that's when the deals just happen, and that's when the troughs aren't nearly as bad and the rejections aren't nearly as frequent.
Yeah, I just want to touch on something you just said then, because, you know, like, rejection is a problem and sometimes you do get that thump, thump, thump. But that was a really good tip there that I don't want to get lost, is that if you have experienced that a couple of times, find someone in your database that you did a good job for that was really happy and just call them.
Call them.
Call the people that love you. That's probably one of the quickest ways to pick yourself back up again, is find someone that's, you know, been really happy.
My dad used to say the best time to win a listing is when you've just won one. The best time to make a sale is when you've just signed one up. And so if you ring an old friend who's a past client who you really got along with, the best time to make the next phone call is straight after that one, and get on the roll and build it into your daily routine, so that an hour or two every day is making those phone calls. Then the troughs are not troughs, or your troughs are other people's peaks. because you've got this swelling community. And that's when you need a PA, is when you find the time to be making those long-term relationship-building calls. But the important thing is, don't waste the call. Ask them the important questions. Do you have a house to sell? And if, like, my style was really upfront, you haven't got a place to sell? Okay, just checking. But other people can do it in your own style. Do you know anyone's got a house to sell? Slip it in. There's nothing wrong with that. They know you're working. They know that you're not ringing them on their on your personal clock. You're not catching up with them for a beer. You've got your role in this community to play. And that's, agents are market makers. So the agents are the ones that facilitate the transactions, that coach the people over the line. The transactions don't happen without the real estate agents lubricating the event to get from A to B for people selling and buying. It's an awesome job. I really love it. To be honest, if I get out of Box and Dice, I'll probably get a job for my sister down in Mornington Peninsula, listing and selling and doing auctions for her, because I just love it. The thrill of the transaction is just awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you just, interesting phrase there that you said, that agents are market makers. And I think particularly during this time when listings are quite low, that you have to be a market maker more than ever with these low volumes that we're experiencing. What are some tips to make things happen in your market from your experience?
Well, it's interesting because people go and do a course to become a real estate agent, to be have a license to transact property on behalf of a third party. But the real qualification that they require is there's a stream of psychology, there's a stream of tax and awareness of property tax, taxes in and around a property transaction, financial planning, because you need to be able to converse on what that investment property means to them. You can't be a dummy and say, oh, buy that, it's a good investment. You've got to follow through on the banter. Marriage counselling, the amount of living rooms I've sat in with a husband and wife, bereavement counselling, the amount of living rooms I sat in and dealing with the three sons on the settling of the estate, the relationship counselling between the three sons in order to get them all to agree on the one authority to list with the one agent. So the market makers are the ones that have the skills to deal with the daily events of the customers. And having those skills, clearly you can't go and just do it at the age of 18. Or if you do, you're an exceptional human. You've got to get out there and get the life experience. You've got to follow Tim Heaviside around and listen to how he does it and ask him questions afterwards and make sure that you understand the answer. Otherwise, you might be in the wrong industry. You've got to be passionate about helping people move on with their lives. And whatever that means, I've done an auctions where the husband's in the back room, the wife's in the front room, and both families are there supporting them. That's a tense situation. And you can't be lacking in empathy skills and expect to bring about a transaction, because you've got to literally counsel people about market value whilst they want to throw knives at each other. Or that not just the husband and wife, they've usually moved on as the families that want to kill each other. And then there's the kids. And, you know, there's some really awful situations that agents face that a two-week course doesn't qualify you to do. So it's unfortunate the qualification of the industry scaling back, when really you should need a degree to get into the real estate industry, and there should be streams of tax, psychology, financial planning, bereavement counselling, relationship management, business management, trust accounting legislation. There's all sorts of things. It's a complex job.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that at all. Actually, I interviewed someone recently who said you also need to be able to duck, which just reminded me of...
Dodge the bullets.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Which they don't teach you in your license course either, I don't think.
That's in communication skills. Knowing when not to speak is a real art. Silence is the most penetrating negotiation tool. The use of silence is profound when negotiating a price, and knowing when to put a situation forward and then just shut up, because so many agents forget their role and get caught in the transaction with their own banter and routine. If you're down to the last little gap, silence is everything. If you've got a large gap, you know, giving the three options, accept, reject, counteroffer, and standing back and letting people talk themselves into the sale is usually the best strategy, because usually you've got the opposites attracting. You've got a seller and a buyer that usually someone wants to sell and someone wants to buy. Often agents will block offers. It kills me. Oh, I'd like to make her an offer on this property. Although they won't accept that. Well, how do you know? Yeah, they told me. Really? I've sold Travis Williams. I sold a property where they set the reserve at X number of dollars. And I said, yep. Okay, we'll do that. We passed in the auction. And the very next day he said, look, I've got to sell. What do you mean you've got to sell? You had your reserve. You know, we've already bought, we're settling in 30 days. I was just trying to get you to work harder. You can never second guess your clients and always give them a chance to change their minds, because that's how the sale happens.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about CRMs at the moment. What are the biggest mistakes you see agents making in terms of using their CRM systems to its full advantage?
A CRM is a tool of the trade, and you would never go and become a builder and have a cheap drill or no drill at all. You would never be hand sawing when you could have a circular saw. Still to this era, although it's much better in 2020 and particularly during COVID, is not going back and making sure you can fully exploit the tools that you have. And the exact specific example I'll refer to is the usage of our agent app. If you're a client of Box and Dice and you're an agent on the tools, our agent app works on any phone or any tablet, but it gives you around-the-clock access to everyone that's ever dealt with you and gives you all of their information that you need. To not exploit the tools of the trade is now sacrilege. And the phrase, oh, I'm old school, that no longer can be accepted. Even the oldest of old need to be employing someone to stand next to them 24/7, because the tools of the trade now are essential. The reason is the collection of the data. It's not about that old school person that says, I've got the school skills, influential skills to make the deal. Yeah, that's fine, but that's just one deal. That's an incredible problem if all aspects of that deal are not saved digitally and monetized at a later date, including who else was interested in the property, what they said, what they liked and disliked about it, what other properties they might like. Otherwise, you're relying on a web portal to do entry-level matching, because the web portals want more hits. We can talk about the web portals in a different conversation, but to not collect every metric of the transaction now is sacrilege.
Yeah, so I think you might have been just about to touch on the whole off-portal, off-market thing, which has also gained a fair bit of ground over the last couple of months particularly, or even the last 12 months. But how do you see the agent's database playing a role in getting properties moved quickly in this environment?
So the web portals actually have an interest in not helping buyers. It sounds incredible, but if you look at the advanced searching on a web portal, a billion-dollar one, they actually, to buy, they have pets allowed. And it shows that nobody's using it. No one's doing any advanced searches. They actually want the buyers to keep clicking next and next and next and keep going in and out of listings and clicking through the photos and reading the text and going in and out. The web portals have a vested interest in dragging the buyer through a long-winded process and inspecting as many properties as possible, contacting as many agents as possible. That's what the web portals need to thrive. And the agents have a whole different agenda. The agents are market makers. They have a focus on making a transaction. So the buyers don't get serviced by the portals, because the portals don't have the buyer's best interest at heart. The agents do. The agents want to sell them the property. So the solution is for the agent to, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, collect every single metric of information about that buyer in a system in Box and Dice, so that you can retrieve the information instantly, match it in your own off-market community. One of our clients has passed 1 million records in their database. At last I checked, the portals have 4 or 5 million records. Now, and that's just in one state. Our client is just in Melbourne. Now, that client of ours not only has names, addresses, and phone numbers,
It has likes and dislikes, conversations, check-ins, appraisals, ownership data, first name, last name, email, mobile, properties purchased, what they paid, what the commission was, what the deposit was, when the deposit released, what the settlement date was, old address, new address. Our clients' data is so rich because every person that works at their business is like a tentacle out there collecting information. The portals can't compete with that. And so this off-market community, when an agent is going to list a property, is their intellectual property. And it is the difference. And if you work for that company with a million records, you will lead in with that every day of the week to say, we've got more buyers than the web portal ever will have in Victoria. That's a very, very compelling message. And this off-market community is the single best vehicle for an agent to propose extra value over and above the competitors to win the listing and then make the sale. So the off-market community from now on is everything for an agent.
Mm, I guess what you're saying there too is quite interesting in terms of, yes, you've got a CRM system here, but as a human, you can find out so much more about a person sitting in front of you or on the other end of the phone than a lead generation form could ever possibly figure
out. That's right. And the portals don't have the data and they don't have the people to collect the data. Box and Dice is a utility to get things done, and utility eats content for breakfast. Content is king, but utility eats content for breakfast. So the utility that produces the content has the best content. So the agents, the industry itself, the people having the conversations, writing the notes saying they didn't like this because of the front fence, that they monetize that at a later date when they're dealing with them on another property and the quality of that conversation, because it appears in the app and it's right in front of them, and what other properties they inspected and what they thought of those other properties. And when you list another one similarly, you can move them across to that property. Every agent that has Box and Dice is or should be loading the listing to the off-market community before loading to the web portals to reduce the role of the web portal in the transaction and increase the value of the brand.
It sort of goes to the value that of the actual agent themselves, that, you know, that they can have that conversation down the track that says, well, yeah, you didn't go with this property because you didn't like the fence, but now I've got something else that has come to market with a different fence, so would you be open-minded enough to have another look at that?
That's exactly right. And we're building features now that will enable that to happen automatically on the agent's behalf. And the portals will never be able to compete because they don't provide that degree of utility. Because that's where the agent's value is, in the personal connections and the eyeballing. That's the difference between the real estate industry and Uber or Booking.com or any other portal-based industry, is that it's such an intense transaction. It's not getting in a car, going from A to B. That's a really simple transaction. And Uber's a complex platform made to look simple. But real estate, you always need the human there, and there's always the emotional element. Like I was mentioning before, the split marriages, everything else, and there's the role of the agent is to counsel people through the transaction. Uber will never do that.
Mm. What does the future of real estate look like? I'm sure you've thought deeply about this, but where is technology taking the real estate industry?
It's going to enhance the personal connection to the extent that the individual will be so well informed that there'll need to be less agents. If you're a simplistic, if you're offering to your customers is just closing deals, then you won't survive. You need to harness the information to bring about more transactions. There'll be less agents, higher value transactions. I think like everything in society, the top of the tree will stay at the top. It'll be much more difficult to get in. I think ultimately you'll need a degree to get into the industry, because what happens now is that it's too easy to get into the industry and make mistakes. Those people won't survive. Where's it going? Inspections. The virtual experience will obviously improve. In 5 and 10 years' time, the virtual experience will be very efficient, and the agent's role will be probably, COVID's a good example of how the agents will be able to perform a transaction without throwing 5 sets of keys in the back of the car and taking people around. You know, many inner city places won't go back to that, I guess. New York won't, London won't, I don't think they do now in London anyway. They send them there. But the communication will adopt a social media approach where they'll be collaborating online around things. Beyond that, I think that it's still too far off. I don't see a big change in the short term. I see things staying the way they are.
What about things like artificial intelligence? Have you had any experiences with that, good, bad or otherwise?
I think in our sphere, in the industry, it doesn't really exist. And companies that say they are AI, they're more data analytics. AI is the act of thinking new thoughts, and that's not data analytics. So artificial intelligence is still a little way off in our industry. I don't see it again in the short term. I think that the days that we're at, like in the movie Interstellar, where the machines have personalities, that's a different era and different people will be involved in that. So no, I don't think it exists yet, to be honest. I think there's data analytics out there, and good ones, and there's good data out there. As far as artificially evolving without the human aid, I still think our species is not really that, not as close as we say we are.
It's an interesting conversation for sure. What's next for Box and Dice?
We've just finished 15 years of madness, and I mean, it's a lot of madness.
It's a lot.
But 3 months ago, we rolled out our new Align platform, and for the first time in our history, all the screens look the same, and we've got the one generation of technology throughout the platform, and we are kicking off, and we've started a relationship with Lead Agent, and we're just literally starting to grow. We've not really invested in business growth. We've never really had more than one or two salespeople. We've not sponsored many events. So now we're shifting our focus to growth and building new relationships. And with this new platform out, we've been told and we know we've got the best platform. Of course, I'm biased, but ours is the most functional, but deep functionality and the broad scope of modules that are in the platform truly is an operating system for the whole real estate business now. And so business growth we're about, but also we are delving much further into interoperability and data analytics. So we're making it easier and easier to plug into Box and Dice, because we can't specialize in everything, and we really do encourage third parties to plug in. We did it for a while there, but now it's quite liberating to be able to focus on our core and allow other third parties to specialize for our clients' best interest.
What types of third parties are we referring to there, like things like email systems and things like that? Or
yeah, so if someone wants to really specialize in something, for example, email, and have a customized email, electronic direct mail experience, we've got an API that any third party can plug into and build a customized experience. Sales presentations. So we've got another API where a sales presentation company can pull out information and put it back in to Box and Dice. Media generation, so the act of producing signboards and everything else, we've got an API, someone can pull out, push in information. Websites, if someone wants a really customized web experience, we've got a full website API. We're just about to start plugging into property management, trust accounting and maintenance platforms, so that we can pull all of that ownership data back in and the sales department can monetize the rent roll and vice versa. Business intelligence. So we plug into a BI platform. If someone really wants to explore and analyze the data in Box and Dice, they can do that in a BI engine. So the sky's the limit, really.
Yeah, amazing. That sounds like there's a lot going to keep you busy for the next 15 years there. So that's awesome. Travis, it's been amazing to catch up with you, and we are super looking forward to seeing some more articles and things like that, and looking at some interviews and some case studies with some fantastic agents, and also your own experience, because obviously there's a lot there that you've got to share as well. But just for today, if there was one thing that you wanted to leave the audience with, or one thing that aspiring successful agents should do, what would that be?
Long-term relationships and add value. Build your knowledge about your industry and about the things I mentioned before, psychology, tax, financial planning, bereavement counselling. Build those skills, because they're the things that are real around the transaction.
Yeah, awesome. And don't forget to update your CRM.
Update your CRM, that's right.
Absolutely. Travis Williams, thank you so much.
Good morning, Sam. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate, with thanks to connectnow.com.au. Don't forget to download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts. Visit eliteagentelevate.com.